Well, I'm Ron Stafford. I'm a resident of Kallaroo. I was born in Bega and I've lived here all my life, except for 4 years and 4 months that I spent in the services during the war, in the AIF, as a matter of fact. The Staffords were a brickmaking family. I'm a third generation. And one of my grandsons is still in the business as a fifth generation, so we've been pretty well established here at Kallaroo since 1928. Well, I was working in the brickmaking industry with my father when war broke out, and I always remembered we were on top of a kiln doing repairs on top of one of the brick kilns, and came over the radio. I think Bob Menzies made the announcement. He was Prime Minister at the time, that we were at war with Germany, and I remember my father making a remark. He said, "Well, boys, what'll we do? We finish repairing the kiln or we go to war?" But we didn't go to war straight away, but that was the story there. Of course, later on, I think it was July 1941, I finally enlisted. There was late-night shopping in Bega at the time, and the Army had a recruiting office there, and there was three recruits on this Friday night. That was myself, a chap I went to school with, Bert Evans, and another fella, Osty Kay. And remarkably, we all survived the war, so that was a bit of a let-off. But my sister Lorna, I was the eldest of a family of four. The other three were girls, and Lorna wasn't old enough to join the services, land army or whatever, but she was accepted in the VAOC. That was the abbreviation Volunteer Air Observers Corps, and she did a regular shift at the observation post at Tathra. Now, if you're familiar with Tathra, the observation post was exactly on the same spot as the present-day Little War Memorial, and they used to climb up a ladder up the tower to make their vision better. And it was their job to report all aircraft. They weren't actually involved in reporting shipping, because the Volunteer Defence Corps, they had a post down on the in the cutting of the road that goes down to the wharf, which was washed away by rough seas, I think, in the 1950s. And it was their job to report the shipping. So they were kind of in friendly opposition with each other. And Lorna happened to be on duty. She came on duty the morning just after the William Dawes was torpedoed off Tathra by a Japanese submarine. The skipper of the William Dawes, which had sailed from Adelaide in South Australia, was the next port of call to have been Sydney, where she would have been redirected to somewhere in the islands. Goodness knows where. It could have been Guadalcanal, could have been New Guinea, anywhere. And the skipper arrived at Eden. He was forewarned of Japanese submarine activity on the New South Wales coast, and when he reached Twofold Bay, he was to shelter in Twofold Bay Harbour overnight. But he arrived after dark, and there were strict blackout regulations during the war, and he was totally foreign to the area. He didn't know where he was as far as sailing into Twofold Bay in the dark, so he sailed around in big slow circles close inshore off Eden until daylight, and set off north up the coast, and he got as far as Tathra, which I think is about a mile and a half or 2 miles offshore, and he copped a Japanese submarine. The ship didn't sink immediately. It stopped afloat for quite a few hours, and in the meantime my sister came on duty, and she went up the tower, and she had good quality binoculars and was able to observe everything through binoculars from the observation post. Eventually, it took about 3 hours or so before the ship actually sank, and in the meantime the Japanese submarine resurfaced, and whether they fired another torpedo or not, I'm not sure, but anyway, eventually the ship sank about 10 o'clock, and in the meantime Sister Lorna was dotting down sketches from the observation tower, which we have a good record of, and that's kind of a reference point now to what actually happened.
How old would Lorna have been then?
Oh, she would have been in her mid-teens, probably 16, 17.
Do you know much about what the kind of daily routine would be for her job?
They had a roster, and I think they had quite a good number of volunteers. There was no shortage of volunteers. The men used to do the dog watches, and the girls would have the pick of the shift, which would be during the daylight or the early hours or the late afternoon shifts. But the VDC down on the dugout down on the point, they were 24-hour watch. And the VDC were in contact with the Army, whereas the VAOC, the Air Observation Corps, they were in touch with the RAAF. And the nearest RAAF base north was at Maruya, and then south was at Mullacoota in Victoria. There were no aerodromes in between at that time. Marimula Aerodrome wasn't built till long after the war.
Do you know what sort of aircraft they had at those bases?
I think my sister mentioned that there was Beauforts, Wallace might have been a float plane. I'm not sure about that. I'd say she would have been up the top of the tower in no time, and straight away would have got in touch with Maria or Mallacoota. They had direct line. The postmaster had to extend them through the post office, but they had priority over all other calls. He had just to cut everybody off, and they had priority, so she would have immediately got through to Maria. And I noticed in her sketches that there are planes circling around over the ship. Soon after, a launch put out from Marimbula, which was named the Lass and was owned by the Warne family.
What was the local view of these submarines out there? What was the talk about it?
Well, I think everybody was scared of the situation, yeah, because everything was totally blacked out. Motor vehicles had to have things on their headlights to dim their lights, and you dare leave a window open to show a light at night. There was wardens to police all that, and some people had air raid trenches dug in their backyard. I know the school at Tarsa did. And a pupil of mine told us a story one day. They were all in class, and a plane flew over light, and only very low down. And Noel Warren was the chap that told me this story, and he said the teacher panicked. He said they all rushed out and got in the slit trench, and it was only one of our own planes. It was a false alarm. But they were all keyed up as far as what to do in case of an air raid, yeah.
Do you know if there are other sightings of Japanese activity around the area that just local people would have known about?
Well, there's lots of stories being told. I know Bob Russell, an old historian who's long deceased, wrote a little book on his memories before he died, and he recorded in his book that submarines' crews came ashore at night to replenish their water supplies. Now, I put a big question mark beside that because I doubt if it was feasible, but there again it could have been. Now, an old friend of mine who also is long deceased, she lived to be over 100, Mrs. Alice Otten, she was a descendant of the Davidson family at Eden, and she said a fisherman had been fishing down south of Eden at Batangaby, and he sheltered in Batangaby Bay overnight, and the next morning he was up early, and he sighted a submarine surface quite close inshore. Now, that could have been fact, but as far as coming ashore to get fresh water, well, you'd have to go quite a long way inland to get fresh water by a stream, unless they knocked off water out of someone's tanks, and I doubt if that was feasible. So they might have been all fiction, these stories about them coming ashore to get water.
How far off the coast was the William Dawes when this happened?
Well, I'm not exactly sure, but it was quite within range of eyesight. You didn't need binoculars to see her. I know a friend of mine who's still with us, Maureen Peters, said she was amazed. She was only a teenager at the time. How there'd be a fire on the water. She was amazed. Looked out and saw this fire where the Dawes caught on fire, apparently, and she couldn't work out why this fire was on the water out at sea. So it was well within sight of human vision. Yeah.
Was there much damage? Were people hurt?
There was five people killed. Five of the crew of the William Dawes were killed in the torpedo explosion. And as I mentioned, the launch that towed the survivors ashore at Marimbula, some of them were hospitalised in the Pambler Hospital for quite a few weeks after the incident. The majority of the crew were quick and lively picked up and transported back to Sydney by coach to Bombardieri and then by rail onto Sydney, and what became of them there on I'm not aware. But the fellow that remained in hospital in Pambula, some of the local people befriended him, and they took, you know, gifts and wishes of goodwill and et cetera, et cetera. And he went back and joined American services again. And he finished up being a skipper on another Liberty ship, which was on the Atlantic run. So he would have had some lively trips across the Atlantic with the German U-boat activity. But further to the story, long after the war, he returned to Pambula and endeavoured to find the people that had visited him during the war, just on a goodwill trip, him and his wife. So I'm sure that some of them would have met up with him and said, "Good day again, how are you going?" Yeah.
Ron, what are we looking at here?
Well, the sketches that my sister made, the first sketch, and I presume she was writing from up in the tower, probably with a pad on her knee, and They're a bit hard to read the writing, but the first sketch is first sighted travelling north. The time's obscured. I don't know what time it was. It could have been, well, I'm only guessing now, soon after daylight, I'd say very early morning. And then the ship changed course to due west, so that would mean she was sailing towards the shore. Then the next sketch says she changed to north. The third sketch says first explosion went starting a fire. Then sketch number four, which he's got down at 8:45, that's a quarter nine, fire still burning, more explosions, and the sketches show to be travelling north again. Then our next sketch is number five, and that's taken at 9:30, and she's got more explosions. Yeah, so the sketch shows that she's starting to sink by the stern. The stern's much lower in the water than the bow. Then at 10 a.m, planes circle the ship, so there's no aircraft got there until 10 o'clock, which was quite a while, and she's got two planes in the sketch. And then 10:30, more planes, and then the sketch, she's got 4 planes circling the sketch, and there's also coming into the bottom left-hand corner of a sketch is a small ship, which I presume is the ship that went out to rescue the survivors. Also at 10:30, crew abandoned ship in boats heading for Tathra. And also in this sketch at 10:30, she got the sub on the surface. Now, why the sub resurfaced, I don't know. If there's planes overhead, you thought he would have stayed down, but that's a bit confusing. And she showed the lifeboat now pretty close to the ship, and the ship's got its bow poked up in the air and the stern's below the water. The next one is second last sketch, launch and crew heading for Merimbula. And she shows the launch, which was named the Lass. And she also shows two planes over the ship, and it still hasn't sunk. And it said they're heading for Merimbula. So there's 4 boats behind it. And in the next sketch, the ship still hasn't sunk, but she's getting further down. And in the following sketch, planes still circling. Then the final sketch, ship about to sink, planes and launch standing by. So that's the story. And then she just got a column of smoke in the sky where the ship used to be. So there it was.